You got everything? Phone, wallet, passport?
Yeah, yeah, I think I got everything.
You know she finna start crying, right?
Be quiet, Aubrey. Listen, sweetie, make sure you call us when you get there. You know I'm gonna worry about you.
All right, yeah, I will. My flight gets in around 8:30, but, you know, I got to get some Wi-Fi first. But when I get some Wi-Fi, I'll let y'all know.
All right, man. Well, you know what to do. Handle your business.
As always, we're real proud of you, baby boy.
All right. Appreciate it. Love y'all.
Love you too.
What's good, everybody? It's Kendrick Perry here, aka KP3, aka Mr. Certified in Person, bringing you Life Across the Water. On today's episode, I'm joined by my two American teammates, Ryan Brown and Mikhail Hopkins. We're all playing here together at Ceta Vida Olympia, so I figure while this preseason's going on, it's a good time for us to, you know, sit down and chop it up about our experiences. So stay tuned. We got some good stuff coming for you. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 1 of Life Across the Waters. It's your host, KP3, and I'm joined by my two current American teammates, Savannah, Georgia native Ryan Brown and DC native Mikhail Hopkins. Fellas, I appreciate y'all joining me.
Appreciate it. Sir, what's good? What's good?
First off, you know, before we kind of get into the basketball talk, I got to ask y'all, man, just with everything going on right now, the social climate back home, how are y'all, you know, mentally dealing with everything?
In one instance, I feel like it's been tough, but, you know, in another, I've been coming over here for a long time and, you know, being mentally tested, you know, this is year 7 for me, so... you know, there's always something going on at home that you kind of got to put to the side or on the back burner so you can, you know, concentrate on what you're doing. But this one hits a little different, you know, when it's coming at our people, you know, as a whole. So, you know, it is a little different. But, you know, I've been talking to family a lot, you know, even other teammates, you know, multiple group chats, you know, been getting a lot of it out, you know. So I think that's been helping just talking about it, too.
For me, like Ryan said, I feel like being over here, we are tested a lot in terms of like our mental toughness. We deal with not being with our family a lot. So seeing things in the media when people's families are being hurt and broken by some of the things that happen in society is really tragic. But at the same time, us being Americans on a team in Europe, I feel like we stick together and we have these small conversations and we see the posts and we comment about it. So, like, we see what's going on. We know it's not right. But, like I said, being over here, we already tested a lot. We mentally strong, but we just hope that the nation and our society gets better.
Yeah, bro. Like, for me personally, it's kind of like an ongoing struggle, right? You know what I'm saying? Obviously, we want to focus on our jobs, what we got to do over here to provide for our families. And, you know, obviously, we'll get into all that. But, you know, for me, it's like I always have this internal thought of like, what can I do? I got to do more, especially because I'm not physically there with my family in the U.S., you know, going through this. And, you know, some instances hit harder than others. But I mean, I think for us being over here, being so far away from the situation physically, I think it's really just on us to try to use whatever platform we have. To try to educate people, whether it's people that we know, people that we don't know, and, you know, kind of just take it from there and try to see if we can reach some common ground. But, you know, it's just one of those things, like you guys said, man, you got to take it one day at a time, take everything in stride, and, you know, just kind of, it's unfortunate that you got to kind of put it to the back burner, but it's always going to be there, you know, us being black males living in, you know, America. So, but, you know, we'll dive into the mental health aspect of, you know, playing overseas a little bit later. But just to start, you know, Hop, this is your 6th year. Ryan, this is your 7th year. Just kind of give the people a little breakdown of where you guys played so far, you know, starting with college and then just your professional career so far.
Well, I went to Miami all 4 years, graduated 2014. And then my first year out, went to Tel Aviv. And then I've been in Belgium, Finland, France, Greece, Turkey, and then now here in Slovenia. So I've pretty much been all over, never really stayed anywhere twice. So I've been traveling.
Like you said, I'm from Washington, D.C. I stayed at home. I went to Georgetown University. I'm in my 6th year overseas. My first 3 years, I played in Turkey. My fourth year, I played in Bulgaria. And now in the last 2 years, I've been in here in Slovenia. So I've been in Europe a long time, but I haven't touched as many countries. But, I mean, I had my share of experiences.
So, I mean, you both went to, you know, pretty big schools, you know, colleges, you know, Miami, Georgetown, respectfully. You know, getting that kind of fresh start of playing overseas, what was kind of your mindset? Because, you know, I'm one to always say, you know, to tell people that me personally, I came over here with the absolute wrong mindset fresh out the gate. You know, I went to a smaller school in Youngstown State, but I averaged 20 something my senior year. So, you know, I thought shit was going to be sweet. You know, I thought I was going to go over here, get my numbers against these Australians, and then hopefully get another shot at the league, you know, which is what a lot of guys think. But, you know, when I got over here, I realized very quickly that, you know, these dudes, they got chips on their shoulders just like I do, you know, and these guys have done it for years. You know, while I was in high school, you know, not even thinking about playing overseas for real, these guys have been playing professional at a high level. So was there any humbling experience for that? I mean, what kind of mindset did you guys have going into, you know, this overseas life?
For me, I was kind of on the same wave. You know, I went through basically my first 2 years of college, you know, really being a role player, you know, 3-and-D type of guy. You know, I didn't get too many, you know, like plays drawn up for me and stuff like that. And then my last 2 years, you know, they kind of let me loose and I started to find myself offensively and know who I was. So, you know, coming out, I was thinking, hey, I found myself now. I can hit the ground running. I can do this. I can do that. And the first place I went to actually was a humbling experience because I went to Israel and I was there for probably about 6 months. And I actually got cut because they wanted another American with an Israeli passport so they could start all 5 Israeli players. Right. Yeah. So
something that's totally out of your control.
Out of my control. Yeah. And they called me in like straight up like, look, we like you. You ain't do nothing wrong, but you're done basically. Right. So, you know, having to go back home for a whole month and figure out where to go and what to do and knowing that it had nothing to do with me. Like I'm hooping, I'm playing great. It's just literally like for our best, the coach saying for our best chance to win, we need to have all 5 Americans on the court.
Right.
So going to Belgium after that and then getting basically handcuffs put on me, you know, it was like, hey, we only want you to do this. We only want you to shoot. We only want you to play defense. It was like taking me back to my first year of college again, and I wasn't really with that. Mm-hmm. So it was a hard adjustment for me, you know, going over there with people I didn't know, you know, other players I didn't know. They didn't know me. So it was like there's no – it's like, hey, where y'all do you know what I could do?
Yeah, or, it's like, where do I fit in? Yeah,
exactly. So it was literally finding out where I fit in and also finding out the places where I could show him what I could do without basically looking like I'm going away from what the team wants
that
to
typical,
do.
That typical, stereotypical exactly. American, right? Coming in here and getting up all the shots, right?
Exactly.
Right.
So it took me a minute, but once I found it and realized that they're not even really worried about stats, it took me about 2 years to figure that out, but, you know, once I did, I feel like my, you know, career really took off when I just said, hey, do what you do good, do what you do well, and, you know, everything else will take care of itself, but it's not easy for everybody.
Facts.
For me, I'm going to say it probably was a little bit different from guys like y'all. Like you said, you averaged 20 points your senior year. I don't know exactly Ryan's numbers.
17.5.
Yeah. But for me coming out of college, I probably averaged 5 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 blocks, something like that. Mm-hmm. So I was the real role player coming out of college. And I'm going to say, honestly, my mind senior year, I was kind of in a space was thinking I was done with basketball. I didn't even pay attention to overseas at all. But I think after our final game in the tournament, our coach said something to me. He was like, you're going to help us out. Help me find an agent so I can make some money and take care of my family. Not knowing much about overseas basketball, I just signed with the first agent that offered the most money. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I ended up going to second division, Turkey. Made a little bit of money my first year. Had great stats, but I thought those stats would be able to carry me into maybe getting a summer league job. Because right. I did no pre-draft stuff coming out of college. One thing I think most Americans find out pretty early, winning is the most important thing overseas. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter what stats you have. And I kind of got caught in a situation where, like, my first year, I think we won probably five games, something like that. But I averaged 16 and 10.
Right.
That next year, coming in looking for a job, it was only jobs coming from teams in second division Turkey again or go to a bigger league for less money.
Mm-hmm.
So not really knowing the business yet, I took the most money again.
Right.
And stayed in second division Turkey. You know what I'm saying? And I kind of was in that type of bubble for the first 3 years of my career. I played in the same league for 3 years, had great numbers. Played against great guys in that league because Turkey second division does have money to offer. But I was never able to, like, get out of that bubble in terms of reaching the next step of, like, competitive basketball. One thing I can say about second division Turkey, it kind of made me into a different player because, like I mentioned before, I averaged 5 points coming out of college. Going into second division Turkey, where it was only two Americans, you had to score the ball or they were going to send you home.
So it forced you to expand your game.
It forced me to expand my game. It forced me to work on my game. And then I was coming from a team where I was averaging 10 was a career high, where now I'm scoring 30 every once in a while, stuff like that. So the confidence came back in my game.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, from those steps, it kind of didn't put me in a path where, like I am now, I'm kind of a player that can do a little bit of everything on the court. But coming out of school those first couple years, I had to really find myself and figure out how I was going to make things work.
Right. And kind of just to, you know, transition and piggyback off what you said earlier. So now, you know, you found your groove in Turkey. And Hop, this question is for you specifically. You know, you found your groove in Turkey. You did a quick little stint in Bulgaria. And now you sign, you know, a multi-year deal here in Sedevito Olimpia, which is a... you know, kind of rare when you think of, you know, overseas basketball. But it's something that, you know, we as players, that's kind of what we strive for, right? We want to have that stability. We want to have that peace of mind going into the offseason, knowing that we got something, you know, on the back burner, especially in times like now, right? With Corona, the whole market is kind of fucked up, you know what I mean? So what kind of made you decide that, you know, this is somewhere where I want to play for, you know, not just one, but, you know, maybe two or maybe even 3 years. You know, was there a sense of comfort that you found in the city, just in the system? You know, kind of talk about what went into making that decision.
Another thing that I feel like Americans find out pretty soon is the importance of a good city to live in.
Mm-hmm.
My first year, I actually played in Istanbul, but I was so locked in on basketball and trying to figure things out, I didn't probably take advantage of living in a city like that.
Right.
My second 2 years in Turkey, I played in terrible cities where it was nothing to do. Nobody spoke English, so I kind of stuck to practice, going to the apartment, maybe hang out with my teammate and go get something to eat, but that was pretty much the most of it.
Mm-hmm.
Bulgaria, pretty much the same thing. I played in a city with 30,000 people. Basketball was great because we had great fans. But at the same time, I didn't do much besides go home, practice, play video games, stuff like that.
Right.
When I came to Ljubljana, it was a more Americanized city, as I can say. Everybody spoke English. It was clean in terms of, like, no dirt roads and stuff like that. And just the management side of it, it was just like you can tell it was a real club and a real organization. Like you said, I had played in second division Turkey. I actually played in Bulgarian League, played in FIBA Euro Cup, and now I was on the opportunity to play for Euro Cup teams, which is one step down for Euro League. So for me coming into it, I was like, I didn't reach a level where I want to have some security. And when they offered a 2-year deal, it was one of those things like, I can go here and have a great year and maybe move somewhere else. But if I go here and don't perform as well, let me have something in the back pocket because I don't want to have I don't want to have to make another drop.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right, for sure.
Even though the team always has the option of the release you and stuff like that, I was just trying to come into it with some type of security.
Right.
I ended up making the best of my first year here in Sedevita. and was able to renegotiate another contract, and I signed for 2 years, but I put a clause in it so that I have a buyout in terms of wanting to leave.
Right.
But I feel like, especially this year with the corona and the seasons ending early and seeing guys really wait at home and figure out where they was going to go next, I kind of already knew from the end of the season where I was going. Mm-hmm. And even if I wasn't going to go back there, like, I had some other options, but this was always, like I said, something on the back burner where I knew I was going to be able to go to a team that was going to compete in Euro Cup, also play in the Adriatic League. And that was something that, like, actually had me a comfort in mind this past summer at home. I knew I was going to have a job, so.
Yeah, bro. I mean, especially, you know, like, because, you know, 2020 been a fucked up year for everybody, you know, and obviously with the, like you said, with them, when the corona hit, man, a lot of guys were thinking, you know, including myself, were like, you know, well, I don't really know how this market is going to look in July, August. So when I was presented with this opportunity, you know, I signed super early. Just like I said, or like you said, going into the summer, having that peace of mind where it's like, all right, now I can really focus on getting better. I can focus on spending time with my family and, you know, without having that thought in the back of your head where like, damn, I don't know if I'm going to have a job next year. So that obviously always helps. And Ryan, I'm going to lob it to you now. You know, we speak about family, you know, you being a married man with three children now. Congrats on the newborn.
Sure.
You know, just kind of talk about what that's like, man. You know, being able to have your family with you, not being able to have your family with you, especially in times now like corona, you know, that's making travel arrangements so much more difficult. Just kind of talk about the ups and downs that go with having your family with you while you're playing overseas.
Yeah, so, you know, they've basically been with me like every other year. So my first 2 years, they didn't come with me. They were supposed to my first year, and of course, then, you know, I get cut, have to come back home. So, mm-hmm. you know, that put a halt to everything. And then it was like when I was leaving the next time, I'm like, hey, let's just take it easy. Let me get there, see how I go. So after Belgium, they came with me for a couple months out of the year. And, man, that was probably the smoothest 3 months I ever had. Like, mm-hmm. it made me realize, I didn't think it would make that big of a difference because, of course, they had never been over there with me before. So, you know, when they came for that 3 months, even just coming home from a stressful day and just walking through the door and hearing daddy, like,
right.
for, like that one hug and smile, like, changed my whole mood for the day.
For
so,
sure.
you know, even having wifey there, you know, to make food, just do little stuff, like, you know, just go walk around the city. Like, it was, some of the stress was just lifted.
It's a stress,
you know,
reliever.
Yeah,
it's a physical stress
for
reliever.
For sure, for sure. So, and it's also a stress causer when they're not there sometimes.
Right.
You know, they're going through things at home, things you want to help with, things you feel like you should be there for, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, wifey might be struggling, like, getting the kids here, getting them there, and, you know, there's nobody around to help. And,
right.
You know, she's venting to you at the same time. She knows it's not your fault, but then you feeling like, damn, you know,
feeling
if I was home,
feeling a little guilty
because
you can't physically
exactly.
be there to, yeah, to
there's
help.
Nothing I can do.
Right.
Absolutely nothing I can do but sit there and listen to you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it gets stressful for both sides. You know, and then us moving to, we moved to Charlotte, North Carolina about a year and a half ago. And really, I have no other family there. Like, mm-hmm. just moved to Charlotte. She started working for the airport again, got a better position at the airport. And it's been a little tough there just because all our family's in Georgia. So
right.
scattered across Georgia. So, you know, if she really needed help, like, people can get there, no problem. So here it's been a little tougher, but my kids are older now, so... You know, my oldest one's 9 now, and he pretty much, he take care of himself. He
yeah.
down there for an hour or two, he could sit there with all the kids and, like, be fine. You
right.
know what I'm saying? So, he surprised the hell out of me with that one. But, you know, just having them there with me, you know, those couple of times they have been. They stayed with me the whole time I was in Prometheus in Greece, and I was in France the entire year. So... You know, those were two of the smoothest years I had, you know, and two of the years I played my best basketball, honestly.
Mm.
And it's definitely a direct correlation to, you know, them being there and not being stress-free. I don't
right.
have any problems, you know, back at home. So, you know, this year was tough for us. You know, we talked about, you know, trying to come this year or if they wanted to come for this whole year. But, you know, a lot of things with us, too, like the wives and the children have to make big sacrifices also.
Yeah.
Because... they can't come over here and work.
Which don't get talked about
at all. Yeah. You know what I mean? So there's no have a career from here. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless you own your own business and stuff like that, which unfortunately we don't have our own business. So there's a lot of times she has to quit her job and, you know, move over, and then she come back trying to get a job and they're asking her why you keep quitting, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So this year she kind of just wanted to stay still and see if she could, you know, keep moving up the ladder, get, you know, manager jobs. So, and even for my kids, you know, my oldest struggled a little bit in France with school. I think he was in first grade at the time. And their first grade criteria is like kindergarten, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's basically learning the same stuff all over again, but in a different language.
Right.
So he kind of just zoned out.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was time to go back to school at home. It was like he was a grade behind, you know what I mean? So it was tough for him to adjust. Yeah, he's speaking fluent French in 6 months, but, you know, that ain't helping him at the crib. So, you know, it's definitely sacrifices, you know, on both sides. So this year, you know, it's kind of just like a, hey, everybody just got to thug it out, you know, try to make the best of this, you know, it's effed up situations, effed up year. And, you know, hopefully everything clears up, you know, with the airports and everything, and they can come back and forth. But at this point, we on grind mode right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are, bro. A lot. You know, I was speaking with a peer of mine not too long ago, and he said, you know, the biggest thing about having your family with you is that it provides, it's like a physical source of motivation. You know what I mean? Like, we're all
every day.
Yeah, we're all internally motivated, or else we wouldn't be in the position that we're in, you know, but when you look to the sideline and you see your little man wearing your jersey, or, you know, your wife cheering you on, you know, that gives you that extra fuel you need in your, that when you're in your sixth or seventh month over there, where it's like, all right, I got to keep going.
Yep.
Whereas, you know,
opposite, in that 6 or 7 months, you ready to go.
Exactly. You know what I mean? If you over there by yourself in that 6 or 7 months, you done missed all the holidays, probably birthdays. You like, damn, man, these last 3 months are going to drag, you know, but you know, I'm sure, you know, you get that same feeling with having your family there. You know, moving on, we're talking about the situation now with COVID and the corona, and just how it seems like, I mean, life, of course, everyday life has changed, but for us specifically, sports is changing, right? They're talking about not having, you know, fans in the arena. They're talking about possibly pushing leagues back. You know, we talked a little bit about family and friends may not be able to visit because of certain countries' restrictions and all that. What do you both think will be the most challenging parts of, you know, trying to play a 9-10 month season, doing all the traveling that we're supposed to be doing while this whole COVID-19 situation is still alive and thriving?
The most challenging part about it, I think it depends on the leagues you play in, first of all. Mm-hmm. If you play in a league like ours, where most of our games you have to fly to, you're playing in Serbia, Montenegro, Bosnia, Croatia, it's going to be a lot more difficult. We play in European competitions as well, where we have to travel a lot. But like, I feel like for us, it's going to be the most difficult. For guys that can kind of play in their respected countries, mm-hmm. in terms of like a French league and an Italian league, Greece and stuff like that, the travel is probably not as strenuous. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot more bus rides they might have
trains,
to take. Yeah, like it's a lot more of that going on. So I honestly don't know. I've been jokingly saying like, yeah, the season gonna keep getting pushed back, but I hope it doesn't. But at the same time, it's like, we not the NBA.
Right.
There's no way they can put us all in one location for months at a time and have us play games.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I don't think no team or organization has the amount of money to do that, except for probably a Euro League. And mm-hmm. I don't even think they can do it for a long period of time. So, like, I feel like there's just the travel in general. Like, I played a game last season, the last game of the season, without fans. Honestly, once the ball is thrown up and you start playing, it's not that big of a difference.
Right.
The warm-up is probably the biggest difference.
Right.
But, like, the travel situation, I don't know how they're going to get around that. And that's my whole 2 cents on it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's probably, I feel like it's just going to be no fans, period. Like,
yeah.
There ain't no other way to, you know, to secure, you know, have everybody else feel safe. The bubble thing, I don't think you can keep us there for too long. If it's a bubble, it's going to be a bubble for like a week and a half, 2 weeks. You play two or three games, go back home. Maybe right. come back again for another bubble, two or three games, go home. I don't think it can go over, you know, a month or be there for months at a time. It's a lot of money for hotels, you know. It's right. a lot of
accommodations.
A lot of accommodations for, yeah. for the hotels. Even like that's a lot of planning that can't happen while we're here. That should have been happening before we even got here. For you sure. know what I'm saying?
And so, that's a lot of space too. You're talking about what, 14 teams all in one area? You know, right.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
And you know, I just feel like either you're gonna play or you're not.
Right.
Same thing at home. It's like it's tough to say. I've had family members get it. I've had, you know, friends get it and, you know, get really sick. You know, luckily everybody recovered. But I've also seen people die from it. Mm-hmm. You know, other people's family members die from it. So I know it's serious. But at the same time, I feel like it's one of those things that's just, it's got to run its course. Like, yeah. there's nothing physically we can do about it. So right. it's like, either you're going to do it and just be ready for the repercussions of it. Or, you know, hey, that guy got it. Okay. He's out. Test the whole team. If the whole team is good, they can keep playing. If right. not, they out. They forfeit. Like, it's got to be some rules set up to where everybody feels like, okay, we can keep playing, but if something happens, we know what to expect.
Right.
We know what's going to happen if one of our teammates gets it.
Like, yeah.
Right now, everybody's just like, oh, well, you know.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. Next thing you know, it's November, December. We might have played two or three games.
Right.
Like, and then it's like, what are we over here for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was another thing. It was like, you know, as Americans, they try to get us out here as early as possible to start practicing.
Right.
And for me, I was just like in the back of my head, like, I'm not trying to get across these waters in the season, keep getting postponed.
Yeah, and we just practicing.
Just practicing. Like, we just here every day just practicing, and we could be at home.
You know right. what I'm saying? So, as long as them checks clearing.
Yeah,
that's the problem that I think going to happen is, like,
yeah.
ain't no games. They ain't going to be wanting to cut them checks.
For real. But we out here practicing. Yeah.
You gotta do something.
Some got to shake.
We get paid to practice, honestly.
Yeah.
We get paid to practice more than we get paid to play.
That's a fact.
So, it'll definitely be interesting to see how all this shit pans out, bro. So, last thing we gonna hit on, you know, we talked a little bit about the bubble. I know you guys kept up with the NBA playoffs and everything. We just saw, you know, Paul George kind of publicly say that, you know, the bubble got the better of him as of recently, in terms of his mentality, his mental health, and it obviously affected his approach to the game. And, you know, I commend current overseas player Tu Holloway, who kind of mentioned it. And he said, you know, well, not to talk down on Paul George, but he said, listen, you know, that NBA bubble compared to what we go through overseas really ain't shit. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and not to, like I said, not to, I don't want to put words into Tu Holloway's mouth, but for more or less, he pretty much said, I mean, I got it right. Appreciate you pulling it up for me, bro.
I'll be ready for you it, know, man.
Can't find food you like or the small things to make you comfortable enough. Sitting in an apartment for 10 months, thinking about everything you're going to do in the 2 months you have off in the off season. Getting paid when the team feels like it is a huge thing. Let me say that again. Getting paid when the team feels like it. Developing habits over years that make you impassive to deal with the circumstances you're in to complete the mission. The biggest one for me, he said, gradually losing connection with loved ones, right? Because you're gone for 9-10 months at a time. And then for me, I've had the guilt of coming back and being like, well, damn, I gotta squeeze everything into 2 months. I gotta hang out with my friends. My friends are having kids now. I gotta hang out with my friends. I gotta go back up to Youngstown and see everybody that I went to college with, and, you know, still maintain those relationships there. And then before you know it, it's the first week of August and teams are calling you like, hey, we need you out in 4 days, you know? So just kind of talk about, you know, how you guys kind of deal with, you know, just life overseas, what maybe some advice you can give to, you know, maybe a young hooper coming up that's thinking about playing overseas. Some of your biggest takeaways of what you think this life across the water is really like.
Well, that'll start. I'll make the first comment and say, in my 6 years coming overseas, I've never had anybody come visit me. I know Ryan had his family being able to come. I don't know your situation. If you had people, loved ones come to visit you.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, my first year overseas, I was just trying to get a feel for it. I was raised by a single mom, so my mom's situation a little bit different. Couldn't just get up and leave my little sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other cities I played in, I felt like they wasn't even nice enough for her to come see. Like,
right.
You know what I'm
saying? Right.
If you had the pleasures of playing in nice cities, Paris, France, stuff like that, you want your family to be able to come visit you. But I, like I said, a lot of the places I played, I was like in little villages, basically, mm-hmm. and I didn't want my mom to experience that.
Right.
Slovenia is one of the places that's the nicest places I've been. So I would want her to come out here to see me this year, if possible. But we know how Corona is going. But another thing, like the mental health, I feel like if you... For the young ones at home, if you don't know much about overseas basketball, man, find somebody who does it for a living, and just ask them questions, because like it's a tricky business. I feel like the most important thing is making relationships with your teammates, how you carry yourself with your coaches,
mm-hmm.
and I'm gonna say your agent. Agents can kind of weave and persuade the way your career goes, because. Like I said, coming out of college, I knew nothing about it. I knew dudes hooped overseas, but I didn't know how much money they made.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I didn't know where they was hooping at exactly. I think now with social media, you get to see it a little bit more. We got Switch Culture and stuff like that, showing the life overseas. We got overseas fits and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
showing a little bit of like what we go through on the day-to-day over here. But like for me coming out, like I said, I didn't know much about it. You know what I'm saying? All you know is you're going to be able to make some money playing basketball.
Right.
Like I said. But some of them situations, like, you might have to realize that you might have to take a little bit less money to go to a team that's going to win a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
and give you a little bit more exposure. So that's something that's very key. I felt like I said, one of the ways I got to Cedevita is because one of my teammates in Bulgaria was from Slovenia, and this was his national team.
Right.
So just a simple joke every day, like, hey, yo, get me on Olympia, really got me on Olympia.
Yeah.
His agent came to the city to visit him. I had a meeting with him, and he just seemed like a really cool dude who played basketball. And he was just like, I know how tough it is for Americans to get good jobs, and I genuinely think you better than the league you play in. I can get you somewhere else.
All right.
You know what I'm saying? So something simple like that put me in a situation where, like, now I can really chase my dream and play at the highest level possible.
Facts.
You know what I'm saying? As Americans, our highest level possible is the NBA, but everybody ain't going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And if you got families back home that you take care of, you got to figure a way out overseas how to make as much money in a short period of time. Because by the time you graduate college at 22, you got maybe the 34.
Right.
If you're lucky,
right.
You know what I'm saying? If you're blessed to make some money that's going to last you a long time to invest in and stuff like that. So just like I said, make connections. Be smart. Don't go over here with no attitude. Don't feel like you're better than nobody. Because mm-hmm. like I said... These dudes done worked hard. They love the game, too. They want to play in the NBA, too. And they have the upper hand being from here.
They got to feed their families, too.
Yeah. They speak the language.
Mm-hmm.
They've been friends with these dudes for a long time. The coaches have seen them grow up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, they got a step above us. Yeah, we might be more talented, but, like, situations is not always, like, you know what I'm saying, in our favor. So, just be smart about it. Ask questions, man. Be a good teammate. And just work hard, man. Everything else, I feel like it'll work itself out.
RB?
Yeah, that connections thing is A1 right there. Because from not even just basketball, I feel like life, the way we live now, is more about who you know than what you know.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So I know plenty of guys who are on teams because, yeah, they solid. Now, don't get me wrong. They're not bad basketball players, but they're there because they know somebody or they know a coach or they grew up with this coach mm-hmm. or this agent grew up with this coach and then he got him. Like, it's so many other things that's intertwined that's out of your control that you're going to have to understand when you get there. You just got to do you. Like,
yep.
You got to just play the best basketball you could possibly play and everything else take care of itself. I know a lot of Americans get over there and wonder why the guys from the national team are starting over them or why am I coming off the bench when I'm the best scorer or this, right. that. Like, honestly, ain't no reason.
Yeah.
It's just because he feel like it. You know what I'm saying?
And you can't get caught up in that.
You can't get caught up in it because you have a short amount of time to show what you can do and to make those lasting impressions to where another team called him and they can say, oh, yeah, this is a good kid. He's for the team. He just wants to win, blah, 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 blah. That's all the coaches want to hear. Like, they mm-hmm. don't really... They're not really caring too much about, oh, yeah, he averaged 20. Of course, that helps.
Right.
But you playing 12 minutes, if you averaging 10, like, they obviously know if you was playing 30 minutes, yes, you would average more. Like, right. They don't take a rocket scientist to, you know, see certain things like that. So you definitely just can't get caught up in the, you know, the overall, I got a start, or I'm better than him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I see a lot of guys, that's their downfall.
Mm-hmm.
And chasing the check, like you said, I know it's hard to understand. It took me a couple years, too, and I actually made the decision. It hurt my heart to take less money to go to Prometheus than somewhere else.
Right.
But looking back on it now, like, the coach there was the best coach for me at that moment. Mm-hmm. Like, let me loose, and it propelled me straight to the EuroLeague the next year. Yes, right. I didn't stay there, but it's on my resume for the rest of my career, you know what right. I mean?
And your foot is in the door there.
Foot's in the door, saying? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, just not getting caught up in the, oh, they offer me more money. But yeah, but is that the better situation for you? Because at the end of the day, yeah, you might go make less at this place, but in the next 2 or 3 years, you can end up making more.
Mess around and double and triple. And double down again, you know, if you play your cards right.
Like, literally, I probably doubled, damn near tripled my pay from Prometheus to Panathinaikos
right.
like that.
Right.
But if I'd have went somewhere and maybe made more, had a, you know, a worse year, maybe I only go up a couple thousand, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's all things, it's hindsight, you know, it's always what if this or what if that, but at the end of the day, you know, you just gotta, you know, follow your heart, go with your instincts, and like you said, make those connections and just go into every situation, you know, just knowing that I just gotta give my all and let everything else take care of itself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, you know, overseas ain't no joke, man. It's not one of those places you can just come over and be like, I'm gonna do this or I'm gonna do that. You kind of gotta take it day by day, stride by stride, and kind of see what life gives you, see what the basketball gives you, you know, in that given year. So, you know, for all the young ones coming overseas and, you know, wanting to, you know, make this a lifestyle, it's not easy. And I ain't seen many, many guys retire 2-3 years in.
Man. Talented guys.
Man,
talented,
you ain't lying.
Funny guys.
You ain't,
same
you
age as me
lying,
now.
Bro.
And they've been coaching for 2-3 years now because they just was like, I couldn't make
they couldn't
it.
Do
like,
it.
Mentally,
couldn't
I
do
couldn't
it.
Do it.
They fell out of love with the game. You know,
everything.
They couldn't make the adjustment overseas. Nope. My biggest thing, man, I would say to whatever young guys, either starting his overseas career or thinking about getting into it, is that you gotta be able to embrace the culture, you know, wherever you go. And obviously this goes back into making networks and connections, but, mm-hmm. you know, think about it, man. If you're in one country that you don't know for 9 or 10 months and you're just trying to stay in your room and play video games and watch YouTube and, you know, there's only so much video games you can play. There's only so much Netflix you can watch, you know, until you get bored. Go out, you know. And when I say go out, I'm not talking about like go to the club. I mean, you can
in
strides, yeah.
For your mental health.
Yeah, if you know, as long as you're producing and yeah. still showing up on time and doing what you taking care of what you got to take care of. But, you know, go out and eat some food that you're not going to eat in the States. You know what I'm saying? Go out and talk to people, make connections and embrace the culture. You know, I was blessed my first year to play in Sydney, Australia, you know, which was obviously, you know,
it's basically America.
You know what I mean? It's basically America. So I didn't have to do too much adjusting. But that next year, my first year in Europe, I was in a small city with 10,000 people, you know, so it was a big adjustment. But at the same time, I was like, well, you know, I'm here. I know I'm going to be here for 8, 9, 10 months. I might as well get out and see whatever little bit of this city that I can. You know, if they don't speak English at the grocery store, that's fine, but I'm gonna make my way. You know, I'm gonna try to, you know, at least, you know, be courteous. I'm gonna smile, you know, I'm gonna try to talk a little slower, whatever I can do to, you know, embrace the culture. Because you can't, as an American, we have the mindset like, oh, we're gonna go to this country and they're gonna adapt to me. That's the wrong mindset to have, you know. Like I played in Russia, and I'll let you know right now, they're not adapting to me as an American coming over to Russia. I gotta make sure that I'm comfortable in their culture, with their, you know, with their ethnicity and their background and their cultural references and their food and everything. And if you go over there and treat people with respect, man, and treat people with love, you're going to get all that back. So I think that's the biggest takeaway I can give, you know, anybody playing overseas or getting ready to play overseas. But fellas, I appreciate y'all, you know,
sure. No problem,
pulling up.
No problem, no problem.
Chopping game with me. We got to go get ready for this film session right now. But, you know, Ryan Brown, you know, Mikael Hopkins, two guys who, you know, are vets in this game, you know. for me, overseas, anything plus five, playing at the level that you guys have played at is vet in my eyes, man. So, you know, these guys have seen a lot. These guys have been through a lot. So I appreciate them taking the time to, you know, pull up and chop game with me. So this is episode one of Life Across the Waters. Stay tuned for more. And fellas, again, I appreciate y'all for joining me.
Glad to be here, baby.
Yes, sir. And that's a wrap. I appreciate you guys for tuning in. Thank you for listening this whole time. We'll be back soon with another episode, so stay tuned. Life Across the Water, KP3, certified in person.